Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Squanch. This is Wisecrack's Freakin' Morty podcast. I'm Michael Burns, joined as always by the Lord and Savior of all Squanchers on heaven and earth, the one the ancient scrolls spoke of, Ryan Haley.
Oh, I'll take it. That was a great intro. Wubba lubba sup sup, everybody, here on the mailbag episode. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, so for today, we're getting ready for the big two-part Rick and Morty season 5 finale. So to get ready for that, we are going to dig into the mailbag today. Before we dive in, Ryan, so you were not on the episode 8 episode of the Squanch.
That's true. I was gone.
You were gone. You were very, very missed. Luckily, our kind friends Riley Anspaw and Billy Domino jumped in last minute, did a great job. Not as great as you, buddy. Don't worry. But you didn't get a chance to express any takes. So I'm wondering, do you have any thought? I'm putting you on the spot here, so if you don't, no worries. Do you have any, like, errant thoughts or takes or anything about that episode, or even just want to say what you thought about it?
Yeah, I think that it was a good episode. Mm-hmm. Like it was a little bit, you know, it was a good episode, and to me it was one of those really sad, tragic episodes that was kind of a way more deeper dive into Rick as a character, which I like. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
It still, once again, I'll harp on this, is not an episode I think you can bring to the table to a non-Rick and Morty fan, which to me is the hallmark of a good Rick and Morty episode. I've said this before. But to me, if you're already invested in stuff in the show and the character and stuff, then I thought it was great, which it was actually very interesting to me listening to parts of the episode that y'all did, because, you know, Riley has not watched every episode, mm-hmm. right? So it was interesting getting someone's perspective like that on an episode like that.
Yeah, it was interesting. Cool. Yeah, because Riley kind of came in last minute, very cool of her. But then I watched the episode and I was like, oh no. I was like, this is probably the most like reference heavy one of the season. And Riley, a true sport, who literally just started watching the show and was really dove in the season when we asked her to come on. But yeah, it was interesting seeing the different perspectives. Like, you know, Billy is someone who has a very high knowledge of the show. Riley, someone who's new getting into it. But it was cool to see those two. And I do, once again, I got to express my take on it. I agree. I just love sad Rick. Anytime we like get emotional or a little dark with Rick, I do enjoy it. Not that I'm a sick person that wants to watch misery, but I always enjoy that sort of thing. And it did, I feel like a lot of stuff this season. I'm really curious to see where they take it. I'm really looking forward to these final two episodes.
It sounds like we're going to get a kind of ultimatum on Rick as a character. Just, it's going to be a deep dive into Rick episode is what my theory would be, you know, unless that's what this last episode was and they're going to do something totally different for the big finale, which I could see too. I kind of did disagree. You know, there were some emails about, you know, that episode and the podcast and stuff. And I kind of halfway agree with some people that, like, you know, I think like Billy was pretty hard on Rick and him and Bird Person's relationship. It didn't really work for him. And to me, it was like the fact that, yeah, he was going through hell to have just a moment with his old friend or a drinking buddy or whatever. I thought that was kind of a poignant, like, commentary on his life and how he treats relationships and stuff.
It was very funny because, yeah, I know some people disagreed with Billy's take. There's someone, we're not going to read your email on this, who was like, you need to argue and disagree more. But I was like, oh, I totally disagreed with Billy's take. Like, he gave this thing an incomplete. I was like, this is a pretty good episode. And I kind of liked where I took it. But, you know, Billy, one of those people. It's great to like talk to someone like that who, even when I disagree with him, I'm like, okay, I know you're a thoughtful dude that cares about TV, probably too much. Billy, if you're listening, you should stop. get outside a little more. I don't know. You care too much.
No, do the opposite. Go more.
Get
watch
deeper
more
into
TV.
It.
There's always more shit to watch, more content to watch and absorb.
Continue. Yes. Well, speaking of content to watch, things to absorb. We asked y'all to let us know what you're thinking about the season, recent episodes, and you did. So we'll go through some emails. We'll use them as a jumping off point to talk about stuff. And then we'll get a lot of sleep so that we're ready for the big finale. So let's start with an email. And this is about the most recent episode. This is from Rob. Rob says this: given the insane amount of lore drops in this episode 8, There is almost too much to talk about, but did you guys catch the confirmation that some of the origin we saw in the Brainalyzer was true? From Bird Person's memories, we now know that original Rick's Beth and or Diane died, and that he blamed the other Ricks and sought revenge in his mid-30s. If we assume 50% of what Rick says is a lie, what else was true about that origin story? So, Ryan, I'm sure you noted this in episode 8. I think it was one of the things that all of us that have watched the show for a while either paused for a second or like stopped to be like, wait, what did you just say?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was. I thought it was on me. I thought I was the idiot and going, wait, did they do the whole episode that I'm not aware of, you know?
Yeah.
But like, no, I think that they, then I finally realized, no, it was just an aside comment that completely boggles the whole timeline that we're in.
Yeah, so what do you make of that? Do you think this is building to something interesting, like giving us some genuine backstory about why Rick is the way he is? Is it just playing with us? Because I think the show, quite often they'll reference Diane or his wife in a way that I feel like is messing with us, being like, I know you guys want to know backstory, but that's not what the show is about, so like, fuck off. I mean, what do you think they're doing here?
I think it's both. I think they are totally fucking with us, but due to the nature of the multiverse, which I think they've gone hard at in this season, and I hope that that's kind of a big theme of the final. It's just, yeah, what does anything mean in a multiverse? What does any relationship you've had, you know, what does, you know, and how different people react to that? And I think that, and does it matter? Like, I think that's kind of a big core element to this whole Beth thing is does it matter to the current Beth if she knows she's a clone or not? And how does that change anything? You know, and that's just one of those themes that Rick and Morty plays with a lot, literally.
Yeah. I totally agree. It's like, it's interesting that they are leaning into the multiverse so much this season alongside MCU leaning into the multiverse so much in their Disney Plus shows, Multiverse on the Brain. And I think the stakes for both shows is like, how do you make stuff matter? How do you like keep me really invested in characters if I know there's an infinity of them and all these scenarios? Mm-hmm. And I think Rick and Morty's done a really good job of it thus far, but I'm curious to see what they do. I think they could do something really fun with like upping the stakes and then just undercutting it all, because who cares anyways? I'm mad about that.
See, they go in that route. You're totally right. And they got an hour to play with the double finale. So,
And just a quick reminder, if you're in the chat right now, if you have a question, didn't email us, drop in the chat. We'll try to get to it. Our friend Dude Abide showed up and said, your thoughts of Rick and Morty on Fortnite. I don't actively play Fortnite. Ryan, do you have thoughts on this?
I don't actively play Fortnite. I'm sorry, we're the wrong people to ask this question. I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, if you're in the chat and you have thoughts, let us know. This is a fun question from our friend Afa, I'm just going to assume you're from Ireland, because it's a very, very Irish name. And if you're not, I'm really sorry, especially if you're someone that hates the Irish and I just like said something that's going to cause you to hate us. But Afa said this, this might be a bit far removed from the actual episode. First of all, we love that. Get far removed from the episode. Get weird. That's what we're here to do. But after the Battle of Blood Ridge, when Bird Person refused traveling the multiverse with Rick, I thought of this question / series of questions. When can you just leave? How hard will you fight for where you live? If you could go anywhere in any universe and times get tough to you, do you move? What about if times get tough in your country, your universe? At what point does your emotional attachment get outweighed by the possibility of just getting attached to somewhere else? And how does your level of attachment change when you scale up the place? Can you be attached to a universe at all? Very speculative, weird question, which I like. And I think relates to this multiverse. So I think the assumption that Afa has there is, you know, that one of the reasons Bird Person refused to travel with Rick is that he had an attachment to a particular place, a particular timeline, a particular set of events. Rick, on the other hand, who the fuck cares? None of this matters. We can go do whatever we want. I don't know. What do you make of this idea of if you, Ryan Haley, had multiverse capabilities, what would keep you anywhere? Why would you care about stuff? Do you just move around and just like create chaos in your wake, and who cares?
This is a very interesting question. I think it actually is way more relevant to people's lives than they think. I think that, you know, if I'm going to extrapolate this to our reality, it's kind of like, do you live in the moment and you know, kind of lead this moment-to-moment transient party on lifestyle, you know, or do you set roots, you know, and plan for the future and have, relationships, you know, that grow over time. And, you know, and I think human beings find value in both lifestyles in a weird way. It's like you're kind of, your natural instinct is to at some point, like you want to grow, build something, but also maybe, I don't know, it's just because when you're younger, you want to go party. Let's go do everything. Let's do all the things all at once. Fuck it. You know, hedonistic lifestyle, whatever. Like the, so I think that Rick is obviously in the first corner to a insane degree. But it's just a commentary, you know, bird person is the other half of society that is just kind of like, look, I want to, even though Tammy fucks me over later, he loves her and wants, he could go find a Tammy that's not going to fuck him over, but this was his Tammy and his timeline. He's attached. I don't know. So it's an interesting dilemma that they're in.
Yeah, I mean, it taps into, this is something I think is one of the most interesting things about the show, which is this question of, like, if nothing really means anything, can you have a meaningful life? Can
Absolutely.
There be things that matter to you? Yeah, and I think sometimes there is this thing where, like, you know, maybe you grow up, and you grow up, and whether it's, like, your family or your religion or a sports team you like, you have a thing, and it gives you meaning, and you think, okay, life has purpose and a plan and a structure, and I follow it, and then maybe one day you read a book or have a conversation with someone or watch a movie that really fucks you up, and then you're like, oh, God, what does anything mean? I mean, this is why my favorite Coen Brothers movie is A Serious Man, because it ends with this just, like, nothing means anything, you're fucked, what do you do with that? And, I think... And so I think that this show gets at that sometimes. I don't think it answers that question, but I think it poses, like, if there's an infinite amount of universes and you could do things without consequence and nothing really has direct meaning, what do you do? How do you make sense of that? What does that mean for you?
I would say that even that I'd push back on Serious Man ending, like, with a nothing matters, nothing gives. Like, I think that it's very much a, like, you make your own meaning in this life, you know,
and then
also terrible things can happen to good people that are just, you know, living their life. And then the opposite is true, you know,
for sure.
And how do you deal with that? You know, it's an uncaring, chaotic world that we're in and stuff. So you basically just gotta, I think people give the word purpose too much purpose.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. they're just like, oh, there's no purpose to life. It's like, well, that you're, I don't know. It's like a word, it's a semantic argument, but at the end of the day, I think, yeah.
Well, it's something when you get unattached from it and then you realize it doesn't mean as much as you thought it meant. I will say, just because we're on this digression right now, if there are any Rick and Morty fans who like the exploration of those themes of nihilism and what does it all mean, and you just want a little more of that, the films of the Coen brothers might do for you as well. So obviously, like, Serious Man is maybe one of their more grim accounts of that sort of nihilism. Big Lebowski gets into it in a really funny way. Once again, shouts to our friend the Dude of Bides, using the moniker of that for his online persona. But that's just a random recommendation. We can do that because it's a mailbag episode. We can just recommend stuff throughout
this
here.
This is chaotic.
Yeah,
just like
chaotic. So,
universe.
Yeah.
Bringing it all back.
So thanks for taking us down that rabbit hole, Afa, with a wild question that got us rambling. Now, the next email, we got a lot of this email. A lot of people that came at us, and not you. You're blameless. But those of us who were on the episode 8 podcast, that we didn't give enough credit or talk enough about the potential romance between Rick and Bird Person. So, there's two. We have an email from Greg R., one from Mike G. You get at similar things. I'm just going to read one, but we appreciate you both asking this question. So this is what Greg says. He says, I feel something was missed in your Rick Turnell franchise of the Spotless Mort episode. The stakes were incredibly high for Rick in the episode, and this seemed to be missed by all the panelists. Well, just, you know, say my name, man. I'm not a panelist. I'm a person. Just kidding, Greg. Rick wasn't saving Bird Person out of friendship. He professed his love to Bird Person at the Battle of Blood Ridge. Bird Person doesn't seem to swing that way, and that really hurt Rick. Rick had been friend-zoned. I like that Greg put in parentheses, awful term, but wasn't able to move on. The first person he loved after losing Diane didn't love him back, and he pretended to not care. Even Memory Rick was angry at Bird Person. Our Rick hid his pain and loneliness and keeps on finding reasons to visit his unrequited love, Bird Person. So, Ryan, what do you think about this? This was, I would say, in the emails we got over the past couple weeks, half of them have kind of brought this up. obviously, I feel like I will say this. When people say we missed it, like, I saw that theme. I maybe read it a different way than some people. But what did you think about that scene and what it might mean for the show?
Well, really quick, what did you you said you read it a different way. How did you read it?
I don't necessarily think it was romantic love. I think it was sort of more of a platonic love, and Rick finding a depth of friendship and meaning with Bird Person that maybe he missed since he lost his wife. But I don't know. I think it was like a little bit of a, I think there's a little bit of a leap involved on the eye of the beholder to necessarily say that's like a romantic or sexual love he's expressing with Bird Person. As fine if it is, I don't know. I think that there's an intensity of emotion there that I don't necessarily think was a romantic one. But how did you read this?
I kind of read it that it was him. It was romantic in a way, but also, but Rick's has a very immature way of doing that. I feel like, you know, he's very much, you know, I think somebody brought it up in another email. I can't find it real quick, but they're like, you know, asking about if Rick is bi or not. And then this person was basically saying, look, it's way more than that. Like Rick literally fucks entire planets and stuff. His sexuality is on another level. So I think that like he's, yeah, is pansexual the one where you,
I think it is. I was afraid to say it because I didn't want to be wrong. Literally
anything and everybody.
I'm pretty sure that's, I mean, it.
Yeah, he is a extreme version of that, I think, and so I do think it was romantic, and that he did get pretty hurt, his feelings hurt whenever Bird Person turns him down, and so but he's just kind of, so he's in this fucked up emotional state. Yeah, but you don't think you think it was more of this platonic, just kind of like, oh, I want to hang out with my buddy, and my buddy's not wanting to hang out with me.
So when I say platonic, I'm being hyper nerdy here. There's in Plato's Symposium, which is one of the original, it's like the original Hangover movie or something, because there's like a bunch of bros just getting shit-faced and arguing and causing trouble. And, and in this thing, all these dudes are getting drunk and arguing about like what love is. And they get to this version of love that's like beyond the physical. It's like, I love this person for like their mind, for their ideas. There's like this beautiful truth to like their soul.
Oh, sapiosexual.
Oh, is that the everything? Oh, yeah. So I don't know, but like, so part of me read it not just as a Bird Person is my main bro that I want to get beers with, but like, this is a person whose soul that I love, who I have like this bond with, who means so much to me, almost like family. And I didn't necessarily read it as sexual, although it is fair to say Rick has fucked many things. He has expressed desire to fuck many things. Maybe what's confusing about it is, I think, you know, that's a past version of Rick. Our current Rick has always just been wanting to fuck things. We haven't seen a lot of emotional intensity tied up in a sexual way. So maybe I'm just not used to that. But I think they're, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm still not necessarily reading it in a sexual way, because like, then wouldn't he just turn Bird Person into like a, I don't know, like docile sex robot or something? He has them all ready to go.
He knows that wouldn't be a genuine. He's smart enough to know that the sex robot. Yeah, obviously he probably does have an army of sex robots on some planet that he's already used. Yeah. You know, so I think that this is his desire to actually connect with a quote unquote, you know, real Bird Person.
Yeah. Well, I want to say we'll see, but we might not. The show might not let us know.
I agree. Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited. Their curveballs are always good.
Yeah.
Let's bring them on.
I didn't mean to do this, but the next email is also from a Greg, but a different Greg. So just in case anyone thinks, who is this Greg and why do they keep reading his emails? It's a name. A lot of people have it. This email kind of gets into some of this nihilistic thematics as well. So Greg said, just listen to episode 8, and I have to say, I don't agree with the take that the increase in seriality and meaningfulness of the show is a good thing. And this is kind of, you know, we talked about maybe some connective threads in the show being good. I know I was one of the people that said that. I kind of like the serialization. I like themes interweaving. And to be clear, too, I don't think the show should become serialized like it's the Office or something. But I like a little bit of that throughout. But Greg went on to say, peak Rick and Morty for me has a strong nihilistic through line. The best example is season 3, episode 1, where the audience is made to believe that we are looking into Rick's brain to get canon backstory in the death of his wife, only to find out that Rick has been purposely deceptive the entire time, dashing our expectations. Great episode. I think the best Rick and Morty episodes aren't trolling us any more than maybe the universe is trolling us with the promise of meaning, only to snatch it away at the last second. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a nihilist by any stretch of the imagination, but as I'm struggling across existence on the tightrope of purpose, there's our word again, I can't help but see that below me, there may not be any net to keep me from falling into the abyss of nothingness, and perhaps there is nothing else waiting for me at the other tentpole. The best Rick and Morty provides me catharsis for my dread that I am floundering in the universe, accomplishing nothing except an especially rapid increase of entropy. Rick and Morty's turn towards deeper meaning, character growth, with episode 8 filling in holes in the canon, is a turn away from what I crave from the show. So Greg is maybe not feeling the connectivity of ideas and themes, and really appreciates when the show dangles and dances over that abyss of nothingness. Also, Greg, very poetic descriptions there. Incredible.
I know, Jesus. Wow. Great email. But I think you said you kind of like serialization sprinkled a little bit, and you know, I guess we've called it soft serialization before. I think they have done it pretty well. It's hard dance to do to have little threads that you kind of sprinkle out, little hints and clues of a story and a connective tissue without going full bore into it, which I think they've done good in the past. But yeah, like I've you've probably heard me complain for a lot of the episodes this season. I think they've kind of probably done too much of it this season. And, you know, so I kind of agree with Greg here, this Greg.
Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with, like, I like what Greg says in terms of what the show does. And, you know, the reason that I fell in love with the show is exactly what Greg says. That sort of way it explores that feeling, provides that catharsis. My issue and desire, I think, for seriality comes more from looking at other shows that have lasted a really long time and what happens to them. And I worry that when shows last for a really long time, if they don't have any type of built-in seriality, they can just start to fall flat, or that that juice that made them so powerful initially can kind of dissipate. So I want the show to stay good. I think one of the ways they can do that is a sort of dangling a theme that's never fully fleshed out, never fully connected, but gives us some sort of through line. I know that many people don't agree with me on that one, but that's what I want to see. And I'm just curious, now that we know, and I think we mentioned this before, you know, the next two seasons are like already written. Like, they have two more seasons of this goddamn show in the bag. And I just wonder, like, what do you do with it? There was an email we got, oh God, when was it? Weeks ago. And someone kind of said, is it just going to become another Adult Swim show that's pretty good and last a long time? And I don't want that person to be right. I don't want this to be another long-running adult animation show that's very funny and kind of comforting. I think the show is so smart. I mean, we didn't make a podcast about the show because it was fine. We talk about it on a podcast. We think the show is really good. And I just want it to stay really good. We love it. So I don't know. I mean, how... Do you ever worry about that, Ryan, that if it falls into the sort of like Simpson South Park model, that it runs out of gas? Or do you think that it's good to go even if that's the route it takes?
Well, I feel bad for them that weaving, like, it's kind of a testament to how awesome this show is that so many people are like, is it still going to be as awesome as it was? You know what I mean? Like, that's a weird pressure to have on the show. But yeah, I think anyone that watches it and then you see one bad episode or one episode that doesn't really connect with you, and you're like, oh no, this thing I love is not like firing on all cylinders every episode. What, you know, is it over? And I think that the future is, because they're human beings that, you know, want to experiment, which is cool. And that I think we're going to be getting a sprinkling. It's going to be peaks and valleys, baby. Yeah. We're going to, like, get these classics. Like, I still think the second episode is a classic, one of the best. I could watch that right now.
Another email said I agree with you too much. And I'll say that. Sorry, guys. I agree with Ryan on that one. I think episode 2 was so good. But I promise, in the next episode of this podcast, anything you say, I'm just going to be like, shut up.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, we should do that for a whole episode. Disagree. That'll be good. Anyway, yeah. No, but I think there's still going to be classic eps.
And I think that's an interesting point. Like, I'd rather have peaks and valleys than like a smooth ride through the middle. Because I can deal. Yeah. I will gladly take some throwaway episodes if we get some ones where they're really swinging for the fences. And I guess that's... I guess those are like the three paths. One, you do the sort of like middle of the road, let's just make an okay show thing. On the other side, you can go heavy into serialization. And in the middle, I feel like you take that experimental swing for the fences, knowing you're going to fail sometimes route. And I'm definitely hoping for the last two episodes of this season, they just do some shit that's surprising. Whether it's a serial thing or not, I think that could be the move and a very fun move. But who knows? So we got email from Dem, which I assume is a name and not just them being like, I am a Democrat. Here is my question. but the Democratic Party says, I keep wondering what feels so different about this season. There is a line from the Rick Vangelion episode that I actually think sums it up perfectly. Rick actually says, welcome to the Smith family. This seems surprising to me. Rick is explicitly saying he's not just Rick Sanchez anymore. He's a Smith. Part of the dynamic of the show for me has always been the tension between Rick as an individual who doesn't want to care about really anything and his apparent wish for inclusion in Beth's family. There's been an ongoing back and forth between him and Jerry that seems to represent his internal conflict with the whole idea of family. I feel like this one line really demarcates the seasons prior to 5 and whatever comes after. Not sure I like it yet, but maybe that's where they decide the show is going. As you guys have pointed out, they clearly seem to have chosen to let the characters change and grow rather than stay static from episode to episode. My hunch is that, however much I missed the stuff that came before, I'll be glad at the end of the ride that they decided to take the path of change rather than let the show die a slow death repeating itself. We've all collectively stared through Rick's eyes into the emptiness of nihilism. Now maybe it's time to choose to care anyways. A lot of interesting here too. A lot of these emails are touching on kind of this idea. Do we want meaninglessness? Do we want care? Do we want Rick solo? Do we want Rick as a part of the family? So, I mean, start with this, Ryan. What do you think of that, of Dem's reading, their reading of the line, welcome to the Smith family, and Rick saying that?
I never thought about it that much before, but that is interesting. Yes, that's cool. That does seem to be kind of him compromising with Jerry a little bit, or at least saying, yes, this is your family, and I'm part of it, and we're all one big happy Smith family, even though my last name's Sanchez.
Yeah. Interesting. It has been the most, I think, like, we've had the most family trips this season and family adventures. So it has felt like a sort of mid-80s Chevy Chase movie many times, but in a much better way.
And I like those episodes. And I think one thing, especially going back to this last episode where Rick's going through his mind with Bird Person, one thing they used to do really well was the kind of, I don't know, Seinfeld always did a great, where you had a great A plot and a great B plot, and then they collide together and at the end, and it's amazing, you know? And I think Rick and Morty, some of the best Rick and Morty episodes are kind of like that. And to me, that gives you the just structurally, that's a very satisfying structure. And like this last one with Rick and Bird Person, you know, that was all the whole, it was one story pretty much, unless I'm forgetting.
No, it wasn't.
That pretty much him just going, you know, this one dedicated hero's journey through his mind, which sometimes is cool just for to spice things up, but I don't think it works as well or is as immediately satisfying as the other structure. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I think if there was a B plot of the last episode, it was the neighbor we saw talking to the garage and the garage saying that it would suck his dick.
I guess you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah,
that's like the tiniest thing ever. No, I mean, I think like that's a thing. I think whether, you know, whether we consciously think of this or not, it's a thing we like in our stories. It's a thing we like in TV shows when there are those unexpected connections. You know, that the last minute of Seinfeld where it turns out that this person from Kramer's world is now interacting with Elaine and George in some way, whatever it might be. So I don't know. I guess what I think is interesting about the family stuff is there is the part of me that wonders, is bringing the family closer together setting things up for an even more intense familial fracture than we've seen before? And I think what we've seen growing this season as well is, you know, some rifts between Rick and Morty. We've seen Summer kind of trying to bond with Grandma a little bit more. I wonder if they're setting us up for something big in terms of something bad happening. The family not being so happy. Rick no longer saying welcome to the Smith family. And maybe that's me being skeptical about what the show's intentions might be, but could be interesting. Although that, I guess that would just be repeating the ending of last season where it ended with everyone else getting along and them kind of being like, you know, fuck off Rick and Rick being really sad. And now this season building back up. So I'll be curious to see what they do with that. But I like it. And I think we talked about this in the first episode of the podcast we did this season, that we wanted to see some focus on some other members of the family. And I think we've gotten a good amount of that. I wouldn't mind seeing some more.
I wouldn't mind it either. I'm going to just, my hunch for the adjectives that hopefully we get at the end of this finale is yeah, epic and shaking it up, baby. I wanted, you know, like you're saying, just some big M. Night Shyamalan twist that makes us go, whoa, you know, like I can't wait for next season and how they're going to go from here.
Well, those are the best seasons, right? Like, there's the best feeling is if you're watching a show, especially if it's already in streaming so you can access the next season, you get to the end of the season and you just think, holy shit, how do they get out of this? It's just the best thing you can do is make us feel like there's no way you can get out of this. They ruin the show and then start the next season and just surprise the shit out of us in some sort of way. Now, and I think this show can do that without falling too much into seriality, but like, blow it up. I want to spend the next 10 months, however long it is between seasons, wondering occasionally how the fuck are they going to pull this off?
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be cliffhangers, because I'm not a huge, you know, cliffhanger for the season kind of person, but I think, I forget what, if it was season 2 or 3, but whenever it's Rick going into the, like sacrificing himself and essentially being like, yeah, I'm going to have no memory or something. I forget how it goes down, but either way, that was a satisfying ending, because it's like, all right, this felt like a conclusion, but at the same time, Rick's stuck in this giant human vending machine thing, which was interesting to think about for the next, how they were going to wrap that up.
Yeah, I guess, final thought on for me, at least on Dem's email, is it does make me think about this tension, you know, you have where it's sort of nihilistic Rick, and then we get these little glimpses of this, like, sentimental, familial, desires friendship Rick. And it's sort of like a never the twain shall meet. It's always this ping-ponging. I mean, I'd be curious to see what does it look like if we get a version of Rick that maybe does actively love his family, but still has that dark soul and a willingness to kind of, like, burn it all down if it's fun.
Oh, yeah. They will never get that punk rock streak from his brain out. I think the show would be over. Yeah. But I do think that, he can become a little softer, a little bit.
Yeah.
Also, shout out, Dim is in the chat. And
oh, what's up,
confirmed,
Dim?
Yes, she's just a Democrat. And her name is, it says Dim's just my name, but Demian Kohler.
Okay, thanks, Dem. And
thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, and regardless of your political affiliations, we're glad to have you. thanks so
way.
Much, Dem. And Dem, that was just like a good question. Glad you're here. So there's another question that I think kind of is in the same wheelhouse as Dem's, and this one is from Michael C. As a Michael B, I guess that means he's a more advanced model. So good for you, Michael C. But another one that's about sort of Rick's storyline and what's happening with the character. Michael C. says, they're trying to make us go on the same emotional journey as Rick. We see this, as we see in this episode, episode 8, that it matters if Bird Person went through experiences with him. Why fix this Bird Person when there is one that didn't marry Tammy? Why give this Bird Person a beacon if you could find one that will adventure with you? Rick has been pushing his emotions away with drugs, different dimensions, bets, and thrills because he lost his daughter and wife. I think this is an excellent building block for the audience and Rick's emotions, but it is not supposed to be the payoff. Rick knows the family will be back, and he's not alone. The steps we have to take to realize Rick's pain are what keeps us pushing the emotional payoff down the line. If the family rejects Rick, the preview had Morty quitting, then we will be jumping from a higher emotional peaks, because now we know jumping dimensions can't fix this family. It is an excellent necessary chapter in the greater story to build in real emotional consequences. I think Michael C. is making an interesting point here, because I think in one sense, so much of this season has been reminding us of the multiverse, using the clones and the decoys and making it very clear that there are a lot of Smith families out there and a lot of Ricks out there, and in some cases, you know, pulling the rug out from under us. Michael C. is saying here that, like, he still sees this theme of Rick focusing on this Bird Person, this family, the particularity of those people, which is interesting. What do you think about that?
I think that is interesting. We've kind of touched on that in this episode, just why he would be inclined to do that. I'm going to make one more prediction for the finale.
Yes, do it.
Okay, since he just kind of sprinkled in that offhand comment that, Beth died, you know, randomly. What if the family, what if he finally tells the family for sure, like, oh, Beth is dead, this is not real Beth, and then also let's go visit, you know, or you guys can see how she died and maybe brings them there, and then Morty's like, what the fuck? And then he quits the family because he's like, that's a brain fuck for him because his mom has died, and then he knows for sure his mom's a definitive clone, yada, yada, yada. I don't know. That's my new prediction.
That's good. We got a lot of predictions of people thinking there's going to be a return of evil Morty. Any thoughts on that one?
That's kind of been around the whole season. People, I think everyone's always waiting for Rick and Morty to come back. And then whenever it happens, everyone's like, oh yeah, yeah. See, I knew it was going to happen. I knew it was coming back.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I think obviously there's the preview for the finale that seems to emphasize that Morty's leaving the family or Morty's fed up. I think after a Morty-less episode, we're going to hit the little guy hard in one way or another. I don't really have any good prediction for the finale. I would love
make
to
one
see-
up.
Okay, I want Jessica to come back. I need Jessica's godlike understanding of time. I mean, in a sense, if that worked with what you're saying, who else could help Morty understand that there's still meaning if his real mom's dead and he has a clone mom, all sort of stuff, than Jessica, the one who's seen time unfold it's before true. Her teen eyes. And maybe that will bring the bond back there. You know, for everyone who did listen to our interview with Kari Wahlgren, I tried to get her to admit or wink or like sneeze to say that Time God Jessica was coming back. Could not get a confirmation, you know, goddamn NDAs or whatever. But I would like to see that come back. But I don't know. I think a few episodes ago I had a lot of predictions. I'm kind of going into this without a lot except an expectation that's going to be fun and surprising. That might not be exciting for anyone to hear, but I'm feeling good about it. I'm pretty excited about it. So
I think you're good odds. Good odds of that happening.
Yeah. Our friend Megan Roach in the chat says, because Jeff, which is I think Jeff Loveness, also writes for Marvel, I'd love to see the Squanch team take on a Loki podcast in the season break. Lots of overlapping multiverse themes. I mean, I agree. And it's super interesting that like so many Rick and Morty writers have now jumped over to Team Marvel. Whether because it's a great creative opportunity or because Disney has more money than Adult Swim and people got to get pools. I want them to all have pools. Have you watched Loki or What If or any of these recent MCU shows to deal with the multiverse?
I haven't. I can't bring myself to find the time.
Yeah.
Have you?
I have. Only because we often, you know, at Wisecrack we'll say like someone has to watch this thing. In case there's something there. So I'll have him be like, sure. Like, I will on Wednesday mornings watch the new MCU show with my coffee. But, I mean, it definitely did stand out to me in Loki. Like, it made perfect sense when it's like, oh, yes, someone from the Rick and Morty team is working on this. You know, so a Rick and Morty writer is writing the next Ant-Man and the Wasp movie. So I think it's interesting that they're going there. What you always got to wonder, though, is you take a Rick and Morty writer and, you know, you put them in the Marvel universe, a world where a director gets in trouble for having a casual, consensual three-way kiss on his balcony in Australia, and you wonder how weird and how transgressive can you get? Because if one of the things we love about Rick and Morty is at the end of the day, we do have this sort of like abyssal nihilism that one of the previous emails talked about. In the Disney-backed MCU, we often end up with some sort of like friendship is magic. Or if we believe in ourselves, we too can be heroes or whatever it might be. So I don't know. As someone that has a love-hate with the MCU, the more I've seen Rick and Morty writers' names pop up, the more I think, please let them make it weird. Please let them create a mess in the MCU so we can have some fun with it.
I keep thinking like, damn, Marvel is sapping all of the good creative people. And I want to see them make other original stuff, but I understand the economics of it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess the only hope then is if they suck up, the really good senior writers, then maybe some super weird, fun, experimental young folks get those jobs. I don't know. All I know, everyone, if you know one thing about Hollywood, everything's fair. It's a fair town.
Yep,
1,000%. Everything makes sense. Everyone,
it's illegal not to be fair.
Yeah, everyone who makes money here deserves every penny of it. And everyone who struggles to get by creatively, they deserve that struggle because they're untalented.
I just wish there was a million more Jason Blumhouses, all right, where it's like, all right, we'll give you $1 million or $2 to make your weird ass thing, and we'll give you a little bit more back end or something to make it worth your while, and then you get, you know, some Jordan Peeles out of the deal.
Do you think super rich people used to be cooler? Because, like, this is
nothing. I think tastes have changed. I think people don't have the fucking patience to sit through a shitty movie, and so you get one bad indie movie, and that makes no one go see any movies for a year or something.
But I feel like back in the day, like, super rich people, like the Medici family, were just like, we have infinity money. Here's some money to, like, do paintings, do art, have fun. I just feel like if I had infinity money, I would love to just tell, like, talented people, make, like, the fucking weirdest, most fun movie that expresses exactly what you do. Don't worry about anything else and hope for the best. I just, we need like, cool people with infinity money. So if you're listening to this and you have that sort of money, you know, let us funnel it to someone to make something weird, and everyone will think
Netflix.
We're doing it.
Are you listening to us, Netflix? You are the Medicis of today.
Is Netflix in the chat?
Yeah, Netflix is in the chat. You are the Medicis. Please give me and Michael Burns money to make our weird passion projects as soon as possible.
I would need it. Yeah. I don't know.
And the Rick and Morty writers.
Yeah. In the order of, I want your passion project first. Because the other day I went back and I was, this will maybe lead into to closing out the episode. I went back, I don't think I've watched all of the videos on your YouTube channel, but the other day, like, you posted on Twitter that I just thought was funny. I was like, I'm going to go watch some Ryan videos I haven't seen before. And just really delightful stuff. I mean that genuinely. I have no reason to, like, suck up or be nice to Ryan just because. So I think, like,
thank you, Michael Burns.
Yeah, but if you're listening to this and you have never gotten to the end where we talk about, like, where you can find more of us, you should do that. So I'll say one thing first. Thank you for everyone who wrote and called. If you want to hit us up before the finale, and please do, we got to talk about stuff then as well. Email us at squanch@wisecrack.co. Let us know what you think about these emails. Let us know what you think about the season so far. Final chance for some predictions. And let me tell you, if your prediction's good, we'll then read it and you'll look real smart. You know, don't you want to be the person who writes the email where you're like, this is what's going to happen. Then it happens. We read it out. We say your name. You think to yourself, I've made it. Or you can call us.
Resume.
Yeah. Or call us at 213-534-8807. That is 213-534-8807. So, Ryan, in the meantime, if people want to have the experience I had of watching a bunch of cool videos you made that balance chaos, weirdness, and a big commitment to form, where can they do that?
You can go binge my shit at Ryan's Shorts on YouTube. I just made a video that's burning up the nets called How Do Bananas Have Sex? If you've ever wondered how bananas have sex, go check it out on my channel, and I offer you 5 different options that I would like to hear your commentary on which version you think bananas have sex. It's just a simple question. Thank you for listening and watching.
Wow, I love it. So go check that out. Also, thank you to Sean, to Stefano in the chat. We appreciate you. We're glad you're here. Please come back some other time. If you want to follow me in the world, I'm just Michael O. Burns on the social medias, on the Twitter and on Instagram. There's little underscores around the O because someone – I'm going to find out who the Michael O. Burns is on Instagram and kill him so I can get that as my name. That was a threat. I made a death threat on this. That was a joke. Parody law, et cetera, et cetera. But that was it. This is our mailbag episode. For Ryan, I'm Michael. We will be back for the 1 hour Rick and Morty finale. And just so you know as well, after that, we'll be back with one final episode to wrap up the whole season. So you have 2 more episodes of The Squanch to look forward to.
There's
only
one
more. I know. Last thing to do, pass it off to Ryan, and then it'll be a day.
Whoop-a-lub-a-dub-dub from Hollywood, California. This has been the mailbag episode of The Squanch.